Make your weekend better at Buena Connection Brewing Company. Fresh craft beer, great vibes, and a tap room perfect for kicking back. Grab a pint, bring friends, and enjoy the weekend at Buena Connection Brewing Company. Go to BuenaConnectionBrewing.com. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Beverage Chronicles. I'm your host, Gary Monteroso. Each week, we bring you the latest beverage news, plus occasionally we have those consumer tips to help you buy better. Whether you're choosing beer, wine, spirits, or zero proof options. And of course, we occasionally sit down with the brewers, the distillers, and the beverage innovators who are shaping the way we enjoy what's in our glass. So let's dive into what's new, what's noteworthy, and what's worth bringing home. This is Beverage Chronicles. And this week, our absolutely tremendous reporter, Katie Johnson, is out on the road again, and she has an interview with a person who is involved with a most unusual beverage. And I think you're going to enjoy this. So let's turn it over to Katie and her guest.
Today we're talking about Pachin, an Irish spirit with a really fascinating history. It was produced illegally for over 300 years before finally becoming legal again in 1997. The deep-rooted lore, along with Mara Claire's own family history, helped inspire the creation of Smuggling Nun. I'm excited to learn more about both the spirit and the story behind the brand today. So before we get into the origin of your brand, Smuggling Nun, to start, can you please introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Katie. My name is Mara Claire, and my current iteration in life is distiller, producer of Irish Pachin, which I make in Ireland and import to the U.S. for sale.
Tell us a little bit more about what Pachin is for those of us listeners who may not know.
Sure, happy to. So Pachin may be one of the oldest distilled spirits. No one's exactly sure when the Irish invented it, but it may be as far back as 6th century, and it's what the Irish and Scots learned to age into whiskey over centuries. Pachin was widely made on farms and people's backyards, and when the English colonized Ireland, they specifically made Pachin illegal when they introduced regulation and taxation of alcohol production and sale. They knew that it would be hard to tax and regulate Pachin because it was so widely made. Now, what happened is, of course, the Irish in rebellion continued to make it underground, and that made it the first bootlegged alcohol. And that bootlegging culture was brought around the world with the Irish and Scots.
So you mentioned kind of a comparison to whiskey, but can you tell us a little bit about how it differs from other spirits like whiskey?
Sure. Well, you can think of it as pre-whiskey. And in ancient times in Ireland, there wasn't a strict designation between Pachin and whiskey. It was referred to as having similar terms. However, at some point, their paths diverged, and there became methods for making the best Pachin, in other words, unaged spirit, that was usually malted barley-based. And you would have a different mash bill for something that you knew was going to be aged. But they mostly were both based on malted barley mash or barley mash. Because Pachin was often made by bootlegging farmers, different elements became introduced to the mash. And most of the legal Pachins that are produced now are mainly malted barley based, but the tech file does allow for potatoes and some other ingredients.
And you are a part of the production process, is that correct?
Well, I learned to make it from a retired bootlegger that I hunted down about 2014, and was very lucky to find him. It took me a full year to find someone willing to talk to me because they are still very secretive about their Pachin recipes. He was very helpful, and his recipe was based on one he received from his father, and it's an early 20th century recipe that includes some molasses and beet sugar, which smooths out the mash. And after he taught that to me and I practiced it for a while, I continued to develop the recipe a bit and would sometimes call him and ask questions. When I decided to go legit and make it in a distillery in Ireland, I shared the recipe with them and we sent samples back and forth to each other. When it was ready to bottle, I actually happened to be in Ireland and I helped just a little bit with the bottling.
Well, speaking of transferring some to and from, why don't we jump right into the origin story of your brand and how it got the name Smuggling Nun?
So I first read about Pachin when I was very young. Pachin, by the way, has only been legalized for 29 years. So Pachin was still illegal when I first read about it, and I was immediately fascinated. I guess in my late teens, I was drawn to things that were underground and rebellious, and I was dying to try it, of course. We had a cousin who was a Franciscan nun, originally from Ireland. She was going back to County Clare for a visit, and she knew I was obsessed with it. She hunted some down and found some, smuggled it back to me in a holy water bottle so I could try it. The brand, of course, is named after her.
From my understanding, from what I've read and the interviews that I've seen with you, there's some history with your grandfathers being from Ireland and going back. Is that what drew your interest to Irish culture?
When I was little, my grandfather went over and he came back with all kinds of images of family in Ireland, a picture book and other gifts for me from this magical faraway place. And I grew up being exposed to those stories and our relatives' Irish parties with Irish music. And it was just interwoven in my growing up.
So for someone who has not had poutine before, how would you describe the flavor of it? Or specifically yours?
I will talk about mine because that first taste I had from Claire was very different. Okay. Of course, there was a wide range on flavor when it was made underground. But the pachins that are made today, made professionally, are based on those same ingredients. They're very much still pachin. They're just made well with good cuts and all of that. Being an ancient spirit that precedes almost everything we drink today, it somehow has elements of many different things. When people smell the pachin, sometimes that scent reminds them of tequila. Now, that's not so much the taste, but because it's made in a pot still and those funky, wonderful scents and flavors are not filtered out the way they are in a column still, you get this delicious aroma from it that reminds me of tequila. The taste has an element from the malted barley that, of course, reminds people of whiskey. And real whiskey heads love it because it's like whiskey history in a bottle. You do get that warmth from the malted barley. My pachin's very smooth. So it's 45 ABV, but it's very smooth. And there's also a complexity that reminds me of gin, but without botanicals. It's got a great mouthfeel the way that vodka does, but there's a little more strength and certainly more flavor than most vodkas. So it's very mixable the way vodka is, but with a little added value is the way I think of it. Oh, and because my mash contains some molasses and beet sugar, there's also an element like white rum that reminds people of that sort of sweet-esque quality, even though the sugar obviously doesn't come through in distillation.
Yeah. Well, it sounds very dynamic. So would you say that the main thing that sets your pachin apart from others is that molasses and beet sugar in the secret formula?
Definitely. Yeah. I've otherwise collected all the brands that I can and all the illegal samples I can. So I have a fairly good range of samples. And I do think that that sweet S quality is, I'm not the only one that uses molasses and or beet sugar, but it's something that I think is prominent in my brand, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite way to drink your pachin?
Well, I'm always changing that.
What is it currently?
The latest kick that I'm on is strawberry shrub cocktail, which is actually in a couple of bars in Manhattan now, made a couple of different ways. I love shrubs. I also have really enjoyed doing a sour with it. I call it a Celtic sour. It's like a Pisco sour, but with pachin, and I think it's delish. It mixes very simply too. One of my favorite tasting things to do is a blood orange daiquiri, but you know, you can take a little juice, some citrus, some club soda, and really mix it almost any way that you would other unaged spirits. Oh, also I've done Paloma and spicy margarita, so there's a wide range.
Yeah, I'd say with all of the different characteristics that you were saying, a little bit from vodka and a little bit from rum and this and that, I feel like it would make a great cocktail regardless of how you spin it. So would you say that for a first-time drinker, some kind of cocktail would be better than just neat or on ice?
Well, it really depends. I have a lot of customers who would think it was sacrilegious to mix it in a cocktail.
Sure.
So I guess it just depends if you enjoy spirits straight. I certainly know plenty who do. I often recommend that people start with a lighter pour, which adjusts for the ABV level, and so people get an understanding of how to use it. However, in truth, it's very flexible as a base for cocktails.
So we've talked a little bit about like the fact that it's unaged, which makes it different from other spirits. From beginning to end, when it comes to production, how long does it take to make a batch of your pachin?
Well, at the distillery, they don't need quite as long for the fermentation process as I did at home in my condo in Boulder.
Yes, how did you pull that off?
It's really not too long. In the tech file, you're allowed to let it sit in a cask for up to 10 weeks, and you can still call it Pachin, and that gives it a little color. There aren't too many brands that do that, but some do. Mm-hmm. But part of me feels that, I suppose, if you want to make a whiskey, make a whiskey. It is, I guess, a hybrid is how I would think of it.
For someone who's trying it for the first time, what is something that you hope they notice or appreciate about Smuggling Nun? Is it more you'd rather see people take away from the history of it and the story or the flavor itself?
Well, I think if the person in question has not heard of it before, I think it's great just to taste the flavor. They aren't bringing any baggage to it, so mm-hmm. to speak. Sometimes people, especially maybe older generation people from Ireland, have heard these stories of sort of demonization of it, and they think that it's, you know, going to be dangerous or make them act crazy immediately. Mm-hmm. So I think when I run into people like that, we have a discussion about how it has come along in more recent decades. I do think for a long time, the Irish, many of them, didn't understand what an incredible liquid they had on their hands and how much potential it has. What's interesting about the history of alcohol production, Pachin, whiskey, ale, and so on, the monks and nuns are credited with having a lot to do with its development. Mm-hmm. There were other factors, of course. If you read contemporary history books, they go on and on about the monks. But in truth, nuns had a lot to do with the development of alcohol. And many of them used ale and other spirits and wine to fund their abbeys. So nuns are very much associated with hooch, and maybe particularly Irish nuns, but I know of nuns of other nationalities. They have a real feistiness. They have, many of them, a sense of what is just and answer maybe to laws that are beyond those of states and countries. So many of them can be very bold, and Sister Mary was quite feisty. When I got my first boatload in some years ago, one of the first things I did was take a couple of bottles to her mother home outside of Boston. And I called first to make an appointment. The nun who answered, I was very nervous telling her the story. I was shaking in my boots. And I laid out the whole tale of Sister Mary smuggling it. And there was a beat there of silence. And then she burst out laughing. And I thought, thank heavens. I had a great time visiting them with them, and they all just love the story, and they have cocktails for Christmas that year.
That's amazing. Well, and I think that is probably one of the most fun facts I have learned this Women's History Month. So this fits right in with the overall theme of, you know, what I do on my social media pages and stuff. So I love that. Is there anything about the history or your brand of Pachin that you feel like, you know, you want to talk more about or that I haven't covered so far?
Well, I am very proud of the packaging. I began to make Pachin legally during the pandemic. And we were searching for a name and a label. And I worked with a big design agency actually out in California. That's one area where I really didn't spare expense. And it was early in the pandemic. They normally work with much larger brands. Those brands or companies, I'm sure, put any new launches on the back burner for a while. Mm-hmm. So I felt I had the whole design team focused on this. And as far as we know, we're the only Gothic arch on a bottle of wine or liquor. Now, maybe someone will come up with one, but I haven't seen one in all these years. And that's interesting, as there is that history of alcohol being so closely related to the clergy. And that's why we have a taller bottle, too. As an architect friend of mine pointed out, a Gothic arch is, as he put it, an attenuated gesture, and it deserves a taller bottle. So it is has won awards for its packaging as well as the liquid.
Oh, thank you for sharing. That's not something that I was familiar with, so that is interesting. For listeners who want to try Smuggling Nun, where can they find it, and where can they learn more about it?
Well, we are shipping to almost 40 states online, and the price of the bottle is the normal suggested retail price, and we do ship two bottles free. We always like to say nuns travel in pairs. And I am in many Total Wine and More stores around the country. People are welcome to drop us a line at info@smugglingnun.com with any questions, and we're happy to point to places that are nearby.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for your time today, Maura. I certainly learned a lot. The history behind this drink and how your brand came to be is really fascinating, and you have made the spirit seem much more approachable even at 45% ABV. So thank you again for sharing your talent and your story with us.
Thank you so much, Katie.
What an unusual drink, Pachin. Thanks, Katie Johnson, for that great, great interview. I got to try some of that. Okay, everyone, that's it for this week's Beverage Chronicles, Gary Monteroso saying, see you next time.